The Outdoorsman Radio Show is brought to you by Ellis Outdoors, LLC. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis. Hey, good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining us the second hour of the Outdoors and Radio Show. A little different show this morning for the first hour. We didn't talk a lot about stuff, but we did talk a little bit about some things that were on our mind. Chuck and Diane Spohr here. Sparky's here. Morning, baby.
Morning.
How you doing?
The cake's here.
Oh, the cake is marvelous.
I'll be honest. I'm a cake snob when it comes to, like, store-bought cakes.
This is a good one.
This is amazing.
Yeah, it's very good. We're having birthday cake here, folks, while we're on the air. Just thought we'd like to know. Thanks to Diane and Chuck for bringing that cake in. That was very nice of you. The chocolate cake with whatever kind of icing on it is really good. What do you think of that verse? You're nice, huh?
Yeah.
So we're going to be joined here this morning by Janine McClare, and we're going to put her on the phone right now. Good morning, Janine. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Janine is the program manager of the Maryland Blue Crab program. Is that right?
That's correct.
Boy, that was a good guess, huh? So, well, the news came out a week or so ago that the Blue Crab winter dredge survey had been completed and that the numbers were looking pretty good.
Yep.
So let's talk a little bit about that. Survey. Were you yourself out on the dredge survey itself?
I did make it out on the dredge survey this year. I wasn't out there for the entire duration, but I did get out for, you know, a couple of days and just to see what that survey was like. And it's a lot of fun to be out there on the water and you know, working with our biologists.
Well, they've been doing this for about 30 years now, maybe a little over 30 years. They pick certain sites around the bay. And they drop a 6-foot wide crab dredge with a mesh liner overboard and tow that behind the boat about 3 knots. And how many sites are there altogether? I can't remember exactly, but it's
1,500 sites throughout the entire bay.
Throughout
we split it up with Virginia. They do some of them, and we do, you know, some of them.
I got it. And all this is, of course, is online. And then you collect the crabs. And you measure them and weigh each crab?
Yep.
And
measure, weight, the gender of the crab, and, you know, kind of its disposition. Is it alive? Is it dead? That type of thing.
It's got to be an exhausting thing to do.
Yeah, it's a you know, the entire survey is a long haul for our biologists, for sure.
Right. And then all of this is determine... based on the data, how many crabs we have and where they are, correct?
Yeah, so it just basically kind of gives us sort of a census of the entire population as it stands in that, during that winter time when everything's kind of buried down and not moving around. It's an easy time to get, you know, a great snapshot of what the abundance looks like.
And I like the word that you used is the word snapshot, because you're not trying to grab every crab in the bay, but you're picking a sampling out of each of these 1,500 sites, and that's a tremendous amount of labor involved in that. And how many people are actually, you know, doing the survey, and how long does the whole thing take?
Yeah, so the survey starts in December, and it runs typically through the end of March, depending on, you know, if we're able to get out every day. And it's a 5-day-a-week job. They're out on the water every day. There's a captain for the boat and his first mate, and then we typically have at least two biologists on board as well for our part of it. I'm not sure exactly how Virginia's staffing works.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we kind of try to rotate people in and out so that, you know, folks get a break from being on the boat every day.
Sure. And then at the end of the day, you put the data together in a chart. And, of course, the charts have been established for a long time. And you're trying to, those charts are published. And then chart number one is the density of all crabs smaller than 2.4 inches, which is not big. If you hold your fingers apart, 2.4 inches is about that big. And over the past, well, it looks like about 8 years, those numbers have been down a little bit, as opposed to this year where it looks like the number has popped up. Now, there were some spikes back in the mid-90s, the late-90s, and then it looks like 2012 was a really, really good year for young crabs. But this year, the young crab population, the juvenile crabs, is up significantly. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, so the juvenile crabs are above average this year, and that's, you know, we like to see that. It bodes well for the fishing next year, too.
For next year as well, sure. So you have the juveniles, and then you have the larger crabs, bigger than 2.5 inches, and those numbers are up as well.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, so these are what we call the adult crabs, and we were kind of surprised to see those go up this year, considering the juveniles were low last year, and that just means that, you know, more of them survived to be adults than we initially expected, which is, you know, it's a good thing. It means that, you know, the environment's treating them well, and also our management is working.
Sure. Well, the environment being key there, because no major storms over the course of last year. Now, we had a lot of water in the bay, a lot of freshwater influx from the rain. And we've had this much of the same this year, even more so than we had last year. So, you know, if that last year was not detrimental to the survival of the crabs, then, you know, it looks like going forward that the numbers might start to improve a little bit.
Yeah, so crabs are really great at what we call osmoregulating, so just kind of dealing with the difference in the salt in the water.
Sure.
So having that fresh water, it really just causes them to, like, move around to different habitats, essentially. They're just, you know, they can live in fresh water and they can live in salt water. So just having all that fresh water doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to die. It just means they're going to probably move around
a
little
bit. They're going to move,
you know, different habitats. Yeah.
Sure. Whatever suits them best for food and oxygen and everything else.
Right.
I mean, not necessarily. The salinity is not the determining factor. Correct?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
The salinity is not the determining factor on the survival of the crabs.
No, it's not, yeah. I mean, having the mild temperatures over the winter, that was definitely helpful, because those really low temperatures, when we get a lot of ice on the bay, we tend to see a lot of overwintering mortality.
Right.
So that's kind of one of the bigger drivers for crabs.
Sure. All right, so I'm just going chart to chart here. That's
okay.
Kind of where we're going. You know, the figure three, the third chart in the survey, is the density of male crabs, and that number's up a bit too. I mean, it's on par with 2017 and 2016, but, you know, those numbers from about 2011, 2012 through 2015 were not that good, but 2018 seems to be about where it's a little above average, the way it's been for the last 15 years or so. The male crab. So that means that the commercial harvest should be pretty good, and the recreational harvest should be pretty good as well.
Yeah, so the more crabs out there, the more crabs that are available to the fishery, so they should catch more just because there's more out there.
Right. And you guys look particularly at the females. Tell us the significance of that.
I'm sorry, I'm having a little trouble hearing you.
Okay, I'm sorry. Tell us the significance of taking a look at the females, and then we're going to go to John in Queenstown, who's been waiting with a question on females.
Sure. So our management switched in about 2008 and then became formal in 2011 that we were, you know, managing to female-specific targets. And kind of the reasoning behind that is to protect the spawning stock, so the part of the fishery that's going to, or part of the stock that's going to produce the next generation of crabs. And so we focus on those females, making sure that there's enough out there to make, you know, future crabs. So having those numbers at our target level gives us a sense that the fishery is sustainable.
Okay. Let's talk to John in Queenstown. He has a question about female crabs, and I just kicked off Janine.
Good morning.
Hey, John, hang on. We're going to try and get Janine back, okay?
Okay.
We didn't quite have her locked in, so. Are you there, Janine?
Oh, yep. I'm
okay,
back.
I thought I knocked you off the air. Here we are. John has a question. I hope you can hear him. Go ahead, John. Sorry.
Good morning. There's a lot of kind of like rumor or supposed like public knowledge everybody knows about the life cycle of the female crab, in which the rumor out there is that once they reach a certain size, the apron shows the particular width, that the crab no longer can reproduce, it can't shed, and so therefore it's kind of a lower value item and not part of the whole sustainability of the crab population. And I've seen other scientific research where it shows that a soft crab can shed out in larger sizes. It's just more difficult for it. So what's the whole story on that? And is a larger female soft crab still a viable part of the crab population?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So with females, they have that what we call the terminal molt, and that's when mating happens. And at that point, the female mates with the male, and then she basically can store the sperm from that mating to produce clutches of eggs. And she can spawn, so produce clutches of eggs multiple times with the sperm that she collected when she mated. So she can spawn, you know, in a couple of years subsequent to her mating. So while she's not going to, typically she won't molt again, she won't shed again, she can spawn multiple times. So she's still a viable part of the population because she can produce more baby crabs in multiple years following that terminal molt, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Did you understand that, John?
I do, and now they can still produce, but you said that they're less likely, but they can still molt after that point. It's not complete. It's just less likely.
They're not going to...
Yeah, it's less likely for them to molt. They're less likely to molt again, but they have sperm to fertilize their eggs, so they can spawn multiple times.
So they're not going to grow anymore, but they can reproduce more. So they're going to stay in hard shell for the remainder of their lives, and they may not shed over the course of a couple of years, is what I think I heard you say, Janine. But
yeah.
But they can produce egg sacs, and they can produce eggs and baby crabs multiple times after they've mated one time.
Okay, I guess the other question is then, why do we treat them harvest-wise and resource management-wise so poorly if they're still able to produce young crabs, other than it's cheap and easy for people to get them? Why should we not be protecting the female crabs?
Right, so our management set up so that we do protect the female crabs. Essentially, we're protecting a specific targeted number to produce enough juvenile crabs in the next year, enough baby crabs for the next year. So, I mean, one clutch of eggs is anywhere from like 750,000 to a couple million eggs in each clutch. So one female can really produce a lot of baby crabs. So we really just need to kind of hit our targeted value of abundance for females, and that will help to keep the population going into the future.
Okay.
I think
I'm hearing
John,
that, but at the same time, I'm hearing that the whole crab population is still greatly challenged, so I'm not sure that method is the best one that can be used. It may be popular, but as we're trying to rebuild the population and keep it up there, it seems like there's some, you know, way that it could be done better with the females to keep that support of reproduction better.
Stay there, John. I want to discuss that a little further with you and Janine. So what John is saying, in effect, is, you know, why do we allow any harvest of female crabs? Is it primarily market-driven, or is it within the acceptable parameters of management and conservation that you don't think that even taking the number of female crabs that we take here in Maryland by, we're not allowed to take them recreationally. So the commercial harvest on female crabs, I think that's what you're addressing, John. You know, why haven't we shut that down? Why haven't we stopped that altogether for a period of time to see what happens to our crab population, to see if that makes a difference?
Except for soft crabs.
Oh, I know where you're coming from there, John. All right. So
it's some valuable research. If you can sell a crab for $3 or $6, why do you sell it for half price? That economically, that doesn't make sense either. But in terms of the whole population, let's limit it to the most highest value and most esteemed position of a crab.
I think this is the age-old argument. What is the value of the crab? Can our population be sustained to the point where we can support the commercial fishery and satisfy the demand? Is that a consideration, Janine?
Yeah, that's definitely a consideration. I think the other thing that we have to consider here is kind of the spatial nature of the blue crab, because,
Explain.
The habitats that males and females spend their time in is different, and so people have different access to different, you know, basically to different sexes of the crab. And if we shut down, you know, female harvest altogether, there could be serious economic impacts to very specific certain regions. You know, like, for instance, Virginia would be very, very difficult, something very difficult economically for them to burden, because that's where a lot of the female crabs are, just based on their habitat preferences.
Okay. All right. Well, what I'm hearing is that the commercial interest of the blue crab, the economic interest, is sometimes sideways to our conservation ethic.
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of times, you know, your objectives for a natural resource are a little bit conflicting. And so, you know, we're trying to do our best to make sure that the population is sustainable,
right,
while allowing for harvest of the resource that, you know, blue crabs is pretty much the number one economic fishery in Maryland and Virginia.
So, right. So it's kind of like the balance of those two aspects. Kind of like striped bass. As well, and anything that's commercial has a commercial value, has a economic value, has to be the difference between conservation and the economy, or the economic value of the resource has to be, I mean, somebody has to tread lightly somewhere, because you know somebody who's making money off the resources is not going to necessarily be that person who's the most concerned about the conservation of it. So I didn't ask you to answer that. I'm just throwing that out. So let's see where we're going. This year the number is up. Last year the number is down. I mean, are we able to establish over the last X number of years what our trend is going to be?
Yeah. So that's something that's, you know, kind of typical of blue crabs and just kind of crustaceans in general, where they tend to be a little boom or bust with their populations,
right,
because they are so environmentally driven.
Right.
But I think when you look at the female crabs, mm-hmm, if you look at the density of the female crabs over time, early on in the survey years, you know, things were lower and the average of those years was lower. And now we're, you know, we've bumped up. So the average has moved up. It's a little higher from about, you know, 2009 on.
Right.
So I think with females, we have the right trend going. And we would like to see that continue, and hopefully that will bode well for the other parts of the population.
Well, if you look at the following charts, now we're just looking at the graphs with the numbers up and down on the density, all the crabs, the females spawning in the coming year and so forth. But the charts that interest me are the ones with the baseline that show the average baseline across the board and the up and down. What do we got going on there, buddy? Oh, John hung up. Okay. So we've got the up and down movement across the baseline is the graphs that I'm looking at. The total number of juvenile crabs, the total number of crabs mm-hmm. estimated to be in Chesapeake Bay and so forth. And you guys want to maintain an average. And it looks like to me for maybe 10 years or so there from the late 90s to the mid 2008, 2009, that we were below that baseline average with juvenile crabs, total crabs, and everything else. And now it looks like we're trending a little bit higher over the last 8 or 10 years. Is that accurate?
Absolutely.
Is that accurate? Okay, good.
Yeah, and also, too, like you can see we have like higher peaks than we used to have, like in that late 90s, early 2000s. The peaks, there were some peaks, but they're real low, you know, having those real high peaks.
Right.
Moving forward is what helps to sustain the population.
I got it. So the total number of crab living in the bay in 1990, we were at 791 million. We went to 828 in 91. And then we dropped to half of that in one year. And then we rebounded to double that. And so we've been back and forth between 800, 280, 350, 300, 600, 700, 300. It's all over the board. It's mm-hmm. actually all over the board. There's no real upward trend or downward trend that I can foresee here looking at these numbers. In 2019, we're estimated at 594, which is up from 371 in 2018, millions of crabs. But, you know, when you look at these numbers, they're like those charts. They're up, they're down, they're, you know, it's got to be, as far as management is concerned, it's got to be like bugs crawling on the bottom of the bay.
Managing crabs is challenging because of their life cycle and the way that they reproduce and, you know, how quickly the population can double, those types of things. And a lot of it is environmentally driven, which is something we don't necessarily have control over.
Not at all.
But there are things we can do for the environment that obviously would, you know, help with some of this, you know, the stability of having, you know, some of the larger numbers than some of the lower numbers, you know, things
okay.
like reducing pollution so we have more, we can have better water quality and therefore seagrass beds and habitats that crabs really like. So those types of things are helpful.
Well, I agree they're helpful, but when you have an infrastructure that's failed in most of Maryland's metropolitan areas and all that pollution is running into the bay, just like we every time we have a storm, the whole sewage system in Baltimore collapses or overflows and dumps millions of gallons of raw sewage in the bay. I mean, how do you stop that?
That's not your area.
Yeah, I know it's outside your purview. I understand it, but you know these are environmental things that have to be dealt with and haven't been for decades. You know,
right.
so it's you know this is another challenge to the management of the blue crab and all the resources of the Chesapeake Bay. What was the dump this past weekend? What was the report on the dump of the Maryland of the Baltimore sewage system overflowing into the bay? I mean, it's anytime it rains, there's
right,
millions of gallons. You know, so that can't be helpful. It really can't be, but it's something that we just kind of go. Yeah, that's Baltimore. The sewage system overflowed again. But, I mean, you know, it does affect the resource, and it just there doesn't seem to be, like, an overwhelming focus on it. So, anyway, Janine, thank you. Hang on for a minute. We got to take a short break, and we'll be back and give you a minute there to collect your thoughts on some of the questions that our listeners might have. Our number is 410-WCBM-680, 410-922-6680. If you have any questions on crabbing and crabbing regulations and things like that, Janine McClare is here. She's a program manager for the Maryland Blue Crab. And we'll be right back after these messages. It's time for me to tell you, though, about Chesapeake Outdoors. Chesapeake Outdoors has everything you need for crabbing and for fishing right there at right across the Bay Bridge. It's first choice for Eastern Shore hunters and anglers, and first choice for Western Shore hunters and anglers, too, when you get to the Eastern Shore, right? Exit
39B.
Yeah, I was going to say that. 39B, Dominion Road, right there in Kent Island. Dominion Road, just across Bay Bridge, Route 50 East. They carry everything you need. I mean, they've got the bait. They've got the traps. They've got the live boxes. They've got the trot lines. They've got, you know, if you like to crab recreationally, they've got everything you need. It's just impossible to go in there if you're going crabbing and not come out with a whole bunch of stuff that you need. They've got it. Same way with fishing. For the bay, for the tidal rivers, live and frozen bait, Yeti coolers, Costa sunglasses. Now, on the hunting side, they've got compound bows by Matthews. They've got crossbows by Mission and Raven. They've got all the clothing, all the guns, all the ammunition for anything, including turkey hunting the last few days of the turkey season. You want to check that out. Why not stop by Chesapeake Outdoors, located, again, 39B Dominion Road, Kent Island, 410-604-2500, 604-2500. You'll be glad you did. Let's talk about Clyde Sports Shop. You want to talk about fishing and crabbing right here in Baltimore. If you need it for crabbing, including seasoning and pots and, you know, the stuff that you need to eat them, Clyde's has that, as well as all the bait, all the crab traps, all the bushel baskets, the trot lines, the whole deal, right there at Clyde Sports Shop. They've got the fish and tackle, too, for any kind of fishing, from bass to striped bass, from panfish to trout, and all the tackle as well. They got Shakespeare and Fluger. They've got the beautiful St. Croix rods for you fishermen that want to step up your game just a little bit. They can do rod and reel repair, wind line on your reels. It's your full-line hunting and fishing store right there, Clyde Sports Shop. 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit 9. That phone number there is 410-242-6108 for Clyde's Sports Shop.
This is Alan Ellis for Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex Spray-On Bedliners. Linex Spray-On Bedliners are rated number one and carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust in your bed. Your tools, your tackle, crabbing, and hunting gear can't hurt it. Choose the Linex Premium or the Linex Extra. Both look great. Bay Linex and Catonsville Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards, you get it. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex bedliner and truck gear accessories. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie, 410-789-0199. 410-789-0199. Catonsville Linex, new location, 2076 Lord Baltimore Drive in Windsor Mill, just off Security Boulevard across from Coons Ford. 410-455-0800. 410-455-0800. Linex.
Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you.
Bay Country Bakery. They're located in Cambridge. They've got breakfast, 6 to 11 a.m., Monday through Friday, and all day Saturday. You know, if you get done doing your fishing thing or your hunting thing or coming back from the beach and you want a little lunch, hey, 11 to 2, you can get a tasty lunch during the week. And again, all day Saturday. Now, what's so good about Bay Country Bakery? Everything. They have the most delicious fresh baked donuts and pastries and cookies and breads on Maryland's Eastern Shore. The selection is just outstanding. Grab some at the drive-thru if you want. When I'm on 50, I'm heading to or from the fishing grounds, or I'm going to the beach, or making my deliveries. Well, I'll stop by the drive-thru and get a maple donut like I did yesterday and didn't tell Robin. My mouth and my belly can't wait to... What'd you say, honey?
I'm glad this isn't television.
Anyway, you look for the big donut on the side of the bakery. It's a big donut with pink frosting and sprinkles on it. And then there's one on the highway sign, too. Dave and Gina Levy are your hosts. They're trained chefs, and they're good at what they do. Their craft is just magnificent. They strive to bring you the best, and they do. Bay Country Bakery, located at 2951 Coastal Highway, just through Cambridge on Route 50 East. Think big donut on the way to the beach. Visit their website or like their Facebook page, Bay Country Bakery. And be sure to stop by and say hello. Maybe you'll see Robin and me there. Well, maybe me.
I'm not talking to you anymore today.
W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg is taking care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything. Their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto.
Radio 680 WCPM. Sure, have a damn good dinner. Crab cakes and rockfish too. We thanked the Lord and said the blessing, but what we forgot to do was to thank the man who by hand helped put food upon our plate. The man that dipped the crabs, hooked the fish, and cut the bait. The man that works our rivers, he's our neighbor, he's our friend. His backbone and his folks, the way he makes his living. I'm talking about the man, talking about the water man. I'm talking about the man trying to line the crabs, tonguing oysters and brooking the beef. Talking about the man who makes his living on the water every day. I'm talking about the man, talking about the water man.
You know that guy, don't you, Robin? Bird Dog?
Oh, yeah.
Bird Dog Wheeler and the Road Kings. Right there in Easton, Maryland. Love their music, that's for sure. Hey, Janine, you with us?
Yep.
You like that music? That wake you up?
Yeah, that's some good music there.
That's right, that's right. Well, we try. Chris has learned that you don't play sad country western songs in the middle of the second hour. Because we got to keep people awake, you know what I mean? So we got to...
Yes.
Yes, indeed. How you holding up? You doing okay?
Yep, I'm doing great.
How's the baby?
He's doing good. We're used to being up at this hour.
How old is he?
He's 9 months old.
9 months.
Oh, nice. And his name? First name?
His name is Ryder.
Ryder. Very
Ryder.
Nice.
That's cool. I like that.
I like that one.
I like that. You get a little CC Ryder going on there, Chris, you know. CC Ryder. Anyway.
We're not always this bad.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, we are. So let's talk about crabs. Jenny, what do you want to talk about, Janine?
What do I want to talk
about? Yeah, what do you want to tell our listeners about recreational crabbing? You know, we talked yesterday that we still don't have a tremendous handle on the numbers of crabs that the recreational crabbers harvest. How do we get better at that?
Well, there's been a number of surveys kind of over the year that, you know, try to get at, you know, our best estimate of what's going on out there recreationally, but it's just, you know, those types of surveys are one, they're very expensive, and two, it's just difficult to kind of reach everybody that's out there that's crabbing. And in Maryland, you know, some of our challenges are that, you know, to hand line or to dip net, you actually don't even need a license, so we don't have any way to even know who's out there if you don't have to buy a license. So some of those challenges make it difficult for us to get a handle on it. And, you know, a lot of people come in from out of town, so we have kind of like a seasonal recreational crabbing group of folks, too. So you know, it just makes getting at those numbers pretty challenging.
I get it. I mean, down in Taylor's Island yesterday, there were two young ladies on the bridge and another guy down a little further, and I don't know if they were all together or not. I said, how you doing? I said, doing good. They're, you know, just tan line with little crab traps. How you doing? Pretty good. How many you get?
Yeah.
We got about four dozen. So, okay, great.
Oh.
That's great, you know. But how do you track that number? And that's every bridge and every pier, you know, almost every day, you know. And these people are unlicensed, so there's no way to really check on it. And it's, I mean, it's flip of a coin as far as estimate of the harvest. So,
right.
You know, the limits are reasonable. We discussed yesterday, and I got to bring it up. I just have to bring it up. Anytime we talk about crabbing, you know, the recreational harvest, who figured that it was bushels? And I'm not asking you to answer this question. Why is it based on bushels? Why isn't it based on numbers? You got to count your soft crabs and peelers. You know, you're allowed two dozen, okay? But you don't have to count your hard crabs. You don't have to, you know, you just throw them in a bushel basket, and that's your limit. So, you know, if you had a number on it, you know, you can get 75-inch crabs in a bushel basket. Mm-hmm. But what if your crabs are 6.5 inches? How many are you going to get in there? So how do you keep track on the number, even if you base it on the license and you say how many days on the, you know, on the water do you do? You know, how do you keep track on a recreational basis? Very, very difficult, I can imagine. I mean, do you guys like kind of plug in a number? Does somebody sit down and do an analysis and say, well, we have X number of licenses, and we figure that each of those people put in, you know, one day a week crabbing, and we estimate that. I mean, is there a formula? Is there an algorithm that you guys use to try to calculate the recreational harvest, or do you just kind of, you know, put the dartboard up and throw a dart at it and say, this is our number?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, like I said, there have been a number of studies kind of over the years.
Mm-hmm.
We call them like creel surveys where, you know, they actually go out and interview folks at docks and piers, and they come up with an estimate based on that type of information. And we basically have taken, you know, the sort of the average of what those studies over the years have shown us that we, you know, what we think a recreational harvest is. And that's what we plug in every year is,
kind of extrapolated,
you know, harvest. It's a certain percentage of the total harvest is kind of how we do it.
I got it. So, I mean, being hunters here in the crowd, you know, on our deer and turkeys, we got to call those in, check them in, you know, if we harvest a deer or a turkey. But, you know, there's no such thing about that when you're talking about, you know, white perch or even striped bass or anything else, what the harvest is. So it's very difficult to manage in that type of thing. But, you know, that's one thing the commercial harvest has. They've still got to call in their catch every day. Am I correct on that?
Right.
Yeah, they've got to call their catch in, you know, you know, kind of keep track of the commercial harvest like that. And, of course, you've got your picking houses, and they've got to turn in reports and so forth. So the commercial end, you kind of got a little better handle on it than you do on the recreational end, right?
Yeah, so they have, you know, with their licenses, they with the commercial side, they have to report their landings. And so, they can do it by paper logbook, or they can use our e-reporting where they can, you know, call it in or fill it in online.
Right.
So we do. We have a much more, a more accurate, a more precise way of having a handle on that side of the harvest.
Got it. So, yeah. Any recommendations? I mean, has this been brainstormed about how to get recreational crabbers to participate? I imagine it's kind of like herding cats, isn't it? Because you never know who's out there.
Yeah, there's been a lot of efforts over the years. You know, I think, you know, kind of comes up cyclically, you know, every couple of years there's a push to try to get some more information about the recreational harvest. And, you know, it also kind of comes with a money tag to it. So anytime we have some money that we can, that, you know, put towards it,
right,
that's helpful. So the way it goes.
Okay. Hey, we have a caller here from Easton, Dale from Easton. Hang on there, Gene. Janine, we'll get that call up for
you. Good morning, Alan.
Hey, Dale, how you doing?
Good morning to Janine. I hope she's doing well over in the Ivory Tower. It's a little different than Fort Matapique, but Jeanette, my question concerns regulations. I know the recreational regs I find extremely confusing. I mean, you can do this and do that. If you're not here, you can't do that and you can't do this. I know Frances McFadden back in the day, she had those down pat, but it really was an effort to try to explain those to people. I'm just wondering if there's any way to make those a little simpler. There's so many cans and can't do's in them that I find them very confusing.
Yeah, I think that's a complaint we hear pretty often. And you know, we talk internally about how we can kind of clean that up so that it's, you know, a little more straightforward. And our, you know, our folks in-house that do a lot of our public relations spend a lot of time trying to make them as simple and straightforward in the fishing guide as possible. But yeah, it is, you know, but the regulations kind of are the way they are as they grew over time. You know, each year you might find a new loophole or, you know, and it just kind of added up to where now we have these very complex set of regulations and
kind
we
like,
are, you know,
kind of like Sunday hunting.
Internally about how to make it a little clearer.
It's just like I say, somebody coming down that's not familiar with it is may unintentionally break the law and get in trouble for it. And it's really not, I mean, it's their fault, but it's not real if you follow me. And mm-hmm. just because of the fact that, you know, I've been a resident here all my life and I find them very confusing.
Exactly. But you're generally confused anyway.
Well, that goes without saying. So, but again, it would be nice if there was some way that it at least to simplify in the language, Alan. Besides, maybe consolidating some of it because,
exactly.
Again, there's people out there, I'm sure, that have no intentions of breaking the law, but unintentionally, they could be in violation. So,
yep, there's no question. We broke down some stuff last year in the Maryland Loves Crabs magazine and, you know, got into the different types of licenses and what you could catch and that type of thing and
right.
the different classes of licenses. And
yes.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it was hours of research on try to put it into terms that people could understand, you know.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But
unfortunately, we don't have Frances anymore. She was.
Well, I know that, but you know.
She knew it backwards and forwards.
Indeed, indeed.
Anyway.
So.
All right. Well, it would be nice, Jeanine, if you could somehow, you know, straighten that out a little bit. But I understand there's certain, you know, you've got to go by the legalities of it. So.
Indeed.
Yeah. No, we appreciate the comment, though.
Okay.
There you go. All right, buddy.
All right. Jeanine, keep your head down.
Thanks, Dale.
Have a good day, Dale.
See you, buddy.
See you now.
Bye-bye. There goes Dale. Well, there you go, Jeanine. Keep your head down. So what's that term? I don't know. Don't worry about it. Something in Chibon. I don't know what that means, but anyway. Jeanine, the recreational thing is definitely a challenge. Now, does the department send out volunteer surveys anymore if you buy a certain type of crab license? I mean, do you get something in the mail and says what was your recreational harvest and all that, or don't you do that?
We haven't done that effort probably in a couple of years now, but we do have an online it's part of a volunteer angler survey, but there's like a crab version essentially, and it asks all the same questions as the ones that we sent out with licenses before.
Okay.
And so if people are you know, willing to, we really would appreciate them, you know, telling us about their crabbing trip, whether they caught anything or not, and, you know, some other questions on there, and that information is helpful.
So it's a voluntary thing that you ask people to just basically say, hey, we caught some crabs. I mean, what kind of response do you get on a voluntary basis at all?
Yeah, so, yeah, it is voluntary. It's online on our website.
Yeah, I'm looking at the volunteer angler program. There's striped bass, artificial reef, freshwater shad, smallmouth, horseshoe crab, blue crab survey. There it is right there. Put your email address in, first and last name, day of your trip, numbers of hours crabbing, number of crabbers, where did you crab, you crabbed from how long, what kind of gear did you use, are you a Maryland resident, rate your trip, explain your rating. No, I mean, yeah, the public relations part of this is just BS in my opinion. You need to ask three questions, okay? What kind of license did you have? How many crabs did you catch? And, yeah, that's it. I mean, or maybe, you know, you could break it down by number of crabs. But, you know, when you, how satisfied were you with your experience? Those kind of things, those kind of feel-good things, people don't want to go through that, all that stuff. Make it easier.
Just makes it longer and less likely to get done.
Exactly. Exactly right. It makes it longer and more or less likely to get done, and that's from two old guys that have been around the boat a couple of times and don't like to do online surveys anyway, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, it just, you know.
If you got to answer all the
superficial.
No.
Superfluous.
Superfluous questions, then you don't do the right stuff that people really need.
Yeah, I mean, it's,
I give up after the first couple.
Yeah, you do. You know, you go through and you go, how satisfied were your experience? Well, let's see. It was raining. We had, 2-foot seas. The crabs weren't biting. Not very damn happy. But that's not DNR's fault,
right.
You know.
I drank a case of beer.
Yeah, that's right. That kind of thing.
Spent a long time chumming.
Yeah. So,
well, I don't think that you have to answer all the questions. You could just answer the ones you're interested in. I don't think it requires you to.
All right.
So for folks that
but
don't
it's
want
a
to
lot
answer
of,
the superfluous,
yeah, it's a lot of reading. I mean,
it's like, information
for you.
Yeah. And when you get to the how satisfied were you with your experience rating from 1 to 5? 5 is very satisfied. 3 is somewhat satisfied. 1 is not satisfied. I mean, come on. How many crab did you catch today? Pretty simple. So, yeah. We're just discussing here among friends, Janine. You're part of the conversation, but that's valuable public input that you can take back and present if you want.
Absolutely.
To. All right, hang on there. Hang on a minute. We got to do another commercial or two. Let's talk about Papa John's. This will be the last Papa John's flower script. Forever. We'll do some produce stuff, but this is their last year. Yeah, after the produce season. Adios, Papa John's. How about that?
Wow.
So if you like gardening, if you just like having pretty flowers around, Schillinger, Papa John's Farm in Severn is just off I-97, and their greenhouses are absolutely spectacular, bursting with beautiful plants and flowers, most of which I cannot name, nor do I want to try. But I do know they have annuals by the pack or by the flat and perennials by the pot. They've got bedding plants and planters and hanging baskets. Pansies, I can say that. Impatiens, I can say that because I'm always impatient. And petunias as well. They carry the proven winter brand specialty plants as well. Papa John's has all the vegetables ready to plant in your home garden. Tasty tomatoes and squash and onions and watermelon and cantaloupe. Hot peppers, and herbs, too. Papa John's Farm is located just off I-97 at Exit 2. I heard about a guy yesterday that planted 1,000 watermelons in his truck patch at home. 1,000 watermelon plants. That's a lot of watermelons.
I'll take some.
I don't care who you are. Anyway, 8029 New Cut Road in Severn. You can drive right to the greenhouses to make your selections or call 410-969-5909. Think about flowers and plants from Papa John's Farm for your garden or for your church. And, you know, some people like to see flowers in their church, so why not call 410-969-5909. Papa John's is open every day. Visit Schillinger's Papa John's Farm. It will grow on you.
Storm chances going up for the back of our weekend forecast. Just a 20% chance of a stray storm here top of the weekend with highs today near 80 degrees, lows tonight down to 63, and then afternoon thunderstorms on Sunday with a high near 86 degrees. Mostly cloudy Monday, Tuesday, 70s and 80s. And we've got several warm days next week with strong upper-level high pressure drying us out next week and warming things up for the area. I'm meteorologist Scott Laurie, more from the Weather Channel for Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Hey, if you want to go fishing or crabbing and you need something to go fishing or crabbing, whether it's bait or equipment, go to Clyde Sport Shop in Lansdowne, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road, just off Beltway exit number 9. Or give them a call. Their phone number is 410-242-6108. Crabbing and fishing and hunting and licenses and repairs and all that good stuff at Clyde Sport Shop, 242-6108, 410-242-6108.
Alan Ellis here for Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie Spray-On Bedliners. Linex Spray-On Bedliners rated number 1, carrying nationwide lifetime warranty. Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust in your bed. Your tools, your tackle, your crabbing and hunting gear can't hurt your truck bed. Choose the Linex Premium Bedliner or the Linex Extra. Both look great. And Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards. You get it. Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex Spray-On Bedliner, truck gear and accessories. Catonsville Linex, new location, 2076 Lord Baltimore Drive in Windsor Mill, just off Security Boulevard across from Coons Ford, 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Linex.
Hey, the first choice for fishermen and anglers, hunters and anglers on Maryland's eastern shore is Chesapeake Outdoors. They're located on Route 50 East, exit 39B Dominion Road on Kent Island. That phone number, 410-604-2500. If you need it for fishing, if you need it for crabbing, bait, tackle, or gear, Chesapeake Outdoors has it. Mission and Matthews crossbows and bows, guns, ammo, camo, Yeti coolers, Costa sunglasses, and everything for fishing and crabbing. Why not stop by today? 410-604-2500. Chesapeake Outdoors, Route 50 East, exit 39B, Dominion Road on Kent Island.
If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built their reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire and Auto.
Hey, Janine, you made it. Janine? Hello? Janine, hello?
Hey.
Hey, you made it. We're done.
Yep. Oh, great.
Thanks for joining us. Yep. Tell everybody back at the ranch we said hi.
Will do.
Thanks. Take care. You have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
And take care of that rider.
Oh, will do.
Bye-bye. All right. Chuck and Diane, thanks for stopping by today. Sparky, thanks for coming up today. Great cake. Thank you for the birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Adios, everybody. Get out, stay out, stay safe.
Stay connected.